Well, welcome, welcome, welcome to the Leadership Lounge. It's great to have you joining us today. I have my guest with me, Kate Kelly, and she is the business plumber. And I've asked Kate to join us because we have, some really important stuff to explore, which is so supportive of leadership. Now, you may well have heard me talk before that leadership is about taking people on a journey. Seth Godin, a commentator on this, said leadership's about painting a picture of the future, going there, and people will follow. And that sounds really simple and really easy, but anybody working in leadership will know that actually it often is far more trickier than that. And what we need are systems to support us as we take people on that journey. And therefore, I'm delighted to have Kate join us today, Kate Kelly, the business plumber, to help us to explore the topic of supportive systems. And we'll look today, Kate, won't we, at the importance of good systems, how you establish them, and how you ensure they remain fit for purpose. So, Kate, thank you for joining us. Tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of what you do.
I work with organisations to improve the way the work works. So I help them work faster, work smarter, make fewer mistakes, and become reliable. My vision is that everybody ends up running like Amazon. You place an order with Amazon, the stuff turns up. You expect it to. And it doesn't matter whether you're a very large company, the ones I used to work with, or a small company, the ones I work with now. It's still possible to get good systems that keep running.
Yeah. So you and I both know that. And I'm just intrigued. I know the answer to this, but I think for our listeners and those watching, you're called the business plumber.
Yes.
And I know you normally wander around at meetings when I've met you, armed with a plunger.
An actual plunger.
So you don't actually, though, do people's plumbing, though, do you?
No, it's a metaphor. Although people do often try to get me join plumbers groups. The idea is that the plumbing in your house or any building is hidden. It's in the walls. You only notice it when it goes wrong. And systems are like that. When a system works really well, everybody takes for granted this is just the way things happen. It's when things go wrong that something's not delivered on time or something's misinvoiced or a vitally important piece of information goes astray. That's when people notice it. And I was trying to make the point that it is vitally important, but usually completely ignored until it goes wrong. And it was just a metaphor I used. And the other thing is that if you're networking with somebody and they say, what do you do? And you say, you're a business plumber. People then want to know more as opposed to going, and heading off to the hills.
So basically you're there to unblock their pipes.
Absolutely, yes.
Metaphorically. And make sure that things and systems run smoothly.
And also, it's one of the big problems with any business is the leakages. And, you know, getting rid of leakages, leakages of time, leakages of effort, leakages of money particularly. And by fixing the systems, that's what happens. So it works very well, actually.
Brilliant.
It's a metaphor.
And we love the metaphor, and we love every time we see you armed with your plunger, Kate. So, brilliant. Okay, so let's explore kind of setting up systems then. Because as you said, the systems, the pipes are in the walls. But when you first start something off, you need to set up your systems. And in our last podcast, we were interviewing Richard Dedicote, setting up a new school, Greyscock Primary School. And he was talking about what he was doing as part of that. And so I just wonder if we start that. For some of our listeners here, they'll be thinking about starting something off. So if you are starting something new, where do you start with systems? Is there any kind of advice you've got for people around that?
One of the pieces of advice that I give to people is to keep a diary and jot things down. Now, a lot of the stuff will come into your head and it goes out again because something else has displaced it. Write it down, because you never know when that brilliant idea it becomes necessary. It might be in 2 years' time. But the other thing is that things happen. So much is going on that you don't really notice. And, you know, it can be really bewildering. It can be like spending an hour in a spin dryer and what happened there. If you write things down, you can go back to and say, I can see now that happened because that didn't happen. So next time I must make sure I whatever. But most people start things off on the basis that they think they know how it's going to work. and the wonderful British phrase of muddling through. Mm-hmm. We're great at muddling through, and my aim is that people don't have to muddle, but that's usually how people start. Mm. So somebody wants to become an underwater basket weaver and they know how to weave baskets and they've got this plan and they get the big tubs of water and they start doing all their work. And then they discover that they've got to do other things like actually invoicing people. And then so they think, oh, well, I better do this. And then that goes wrong. And they realize, oh, they've got to actually put their bank account details on the bottom of their invoice. That would be a good plan if they want to be paid. And people learn by their experience. They learn by trial and error. Mm. But there are some very, very good courses for people to go on. And it's very worthwhile going on the course, because even if 80%, 90% of the course, you know, there's always the one thing that you didn't know. Mm. So people like Mentor run courses. And I say to people starting up, sign up for those, because you don't know what you don't know. Mm. Mm. And go on to those.
Yeah.
But I think if you're starting up, you do need to have at least a vague plan. Even you shouldn't have too rigid a plan, because then you won't notice when you need to divert. Mm-hmm. But you do need to know, because you'll end up somewhere, but will it be where you want to go? Mm. You know, you need a roadmap.
So there's a sense, what I'm picking out from what you're saying here is, particularly if you're starting a business or an organisation, get your input first. So you mentioned Mentor. So that's obviously to help people starting off in businesses.
Yes.
That's an organisation certainly based here in East Anglia. And so get some input. So you get clarity on the key things that you do need. And as you say, you had this imaginary person doing their underwater basket weaving. They know how to do that, but some of the practicalities they maybe don't. Mm. So get the input first to know, well, yes, if I'm starting this off, what sorts of things do I need? Then you talked about having that rough plan, not too rigid, as you say. And then you've put alongside that, record, just note down, diarise what you're doing.
Yes.
So that actually, as you unpick what is working well, and so what you're talking about there is that reviewing what's working well.
Do and review.
Yeah, do and review. What's working, what isn't. Mm. And so that you then take a note of the systems you've put in place to start off with that are working, and the ones that perhaps have got this leakage, as you mentioned kind of earlier.
Yes.
Yeah.
You see, one of the things with the work you were doing with Richard Dedicott last time was, you're talking there about an experienced teacher starting a school.
Yeah.
So they already know an awful lot about running a school. It's just at the moment they've got a blank sheet of paper. Mm. But they know the things that should go on there.
Yeah.
And then there comes a point where you just have to start. Mm. Start somewhere, start here.
Yeah. Great. So there's another, again, key thing for our listeners, because our listeners will come from all sorts of sectors, business, education, charity sectors. So it's take into it what you do know. You've got a range of experience already.
Yes.
And for a number of people, you'd be like, in the case of Richard, he's been a head teacher before, as you say, starting from a blank piece of paper. So take what you know into that new context. And then it is a case, as you say, you've got to start somewhere. And then all the bits you mentioned earlier of do and review, that's what helps you then put in the basic systems, but then refine them.
Yes.
Yeah.
If I know that you're going to ask me for one piece of advice at the end, but I'd like to say at this moment, one of the pieces of advice I'd give people is be aware that there are people who will help.
Yes.
And be open to asking that. There's this pressure on people. You ought to be able to do it. I hate that phrase. Should be able to do it. Ought to be able to do it. You may be very good at underwater basket weaving, but not very good at bookkeeping. Well, there's no shame in that.
Yeah.
Talk to bookkeepers and say, how do I get it sorted out?
Yeah.
My own father was an accountant, and before I set up my own business, I actually asked him how to keep my records so that they were right from the beginning. So ask people for help. People love helping.
Mm. Yeah, I think you're totally right. I remember when I started off Everyday Leader, a good friend of mine, Andy, said, look, unashamedly milk your contacts.
Yes.
And he said, people will want to help you. And it does then just become this reciprocation where you then help others who are also starting off.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, as you say, don't be over proud about it. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Because actually, and if you're worried, oh yeah, but what, they're helping me out with stuff, you'll help somebody else out later on when they're starting theirs off, isn't it?
So the ripple spread outwards and we all benefit.
And I love the fact you brought the top tip in right at the beginning. So, but don't switch off, everyone, if you're listening. There's more juicy ideas to come from Kate as part of that. But it's a top tip, isn't it?
That
man is not an island. You're not on your own. You can ask for help when setting these things up. So that's brilliant. Now, I'm a firm believer, Kate, in kind of vision and purpose being key and crucial for things. For example, everyday leaders' vision and purpose is to empower people. It's about empowerment. So whatever we do is driven by that, whether it's the kind of coaching, the training, the podcasts, the blogs, whatever it is, it's driven by that. So how important is the organisation's purpose in setting up systems?
Crucial. If you haven't got a purpose, you're just wandering around and getting lost. Mm. In fact, when I working with large businesses, where you have to have a bit more formal. If you work in small businesses, you don't need that formality. Mm. But with large businesses, we're very clear on what things you should try and improve. Mm. And yes, one of those is past data, and one of those is the voice of your customer, because things are changing. But a critical issue is your purpose as a business, because people put barnacles on their boat. They actually build their own barnacles. They encourage the growth. So they start off with this beautiful streamlined yacht that's going to do X. And then, oh, I'll do this bit, and I'll do this bit, and I'll do this bit. When you start a business, you've got plenty of time, not a lot of money. Mm. So first of all, you do everything yourself. And secondly, you don't say no to anything. Mm. But there comes a point where you have to say, is this what I'm really in business to do? Mm. And I got to that point at one stage where I started saying, no, I'm not going to be reading your manuscripts and commenting on them because I've got too much of my core work to do. Mm. But if you don't know what your core is, if you don't know what you're really trying to do, then you're lost. Mm. And I passionately believe your vision should include the person you're helping. Mm. It should be a statement about the value you're giving to the world, the value you're giving to your customer.
Yeah.
And that's the same for a charity. It's the customer is the person who's benefiting from what you're doing. Mm. What are you doing this for? Why are you doing it?
And I mean, exactly the same again for education. Of course, that will be children and families.
Yes.
And again, so then all of our systems should support that core purpose that we're doing. And if we're doing either a project or our systems that work within that, that actually is hindering who we're there to make a difference to, then we've got to go back and look at those systems.
And that's particularly true in the medical field. Mm. It's amazing how many times the systems, because they've not been connected properly, are actually interfering with one another. So you've got the core, the medical side, which is working really well, but some of the admin isn't. Mm. And there's no need for it to conflict, but somebody needs to do something. And who is that somebody, and what is the something they need to do? Mm. And that's the point where somebody like me can come in and help. They know what they're doing, and I know how to help them improve it.
And often people become blind, don't they, as to what's what's happened, but you coming in with fresh eyes allows you to ask questions. What's your reason for doing this?
Yes.
And people go, not sure, actually. Yeah.
And it's the view that you can't see. I often talk, if I'm talking with women, I'll say, it's the good friend you take with you when you're shopping for a new dress who can tell you what you look like from the back. Because that's what a good coach does. Mm. It tells you what you're looking like from the back. Mm. In these days of Zoom, it tells you what you're looking like top to toe, not just
off screen.
Yes, that's right, not just shoulders up.
That's
really important. You need to have that all-round vision, because otherwise you just see one little bit. Mm. People get used to it, but also people are incredibly busy. Mm. Incredibly busy. Mm. There's so much going on. Mm. And after a while, you just say, "Well, I'm just going to get on with it," even if the "it" isn't actually what you should be doing.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're up to your anatomy and alligators, maybe you should think the objective was to drain the swamp. Why am I trying to build in a swamp? Why am I trying to ruin the local ecosystem by draining it? You know, and you don't have time. You're too busy doing the do.
So when you go in, or even if somebody then looks themselves at, what am I doing and how is this going? And when they realise that actually, this system isn't working, it's not fit for purpose, I need to adapt or change this system, quite often people find it hard to kind of engage in that change. So how important is it to decide on the reason for the system and the reason for the change of systems?
Well, it's quite interesting because when you're working in a large company, which I've done a lot of, nobody can agree what the purpose of the system is. and you have to, that is a stage where people say, "Oh no, let's get on and make improvements." I say, "No, I'm not allowing you to touch anything until we've decided what improvement looks like." I've known cases where people think improvement is working faster. Somebody else thinks improvement is working slower because we want to get it right. If you've got that where everybody's saying, "Yes, yes, we all agree it's improvement," they're not actually agreeing. So you've really got to have clarity on that. And that's why vision is so important. You need to know what you're trying to achieve because that's your touchstone. And then if you say, well, for example, you might say the really important thing is to be able to deliver goods the next day. Then everything is about what's stopping us doing that? What would help us do it more? And you come back to that. And this is the improvement statement actually says what you're going to work on. And sometimes once you've worked out what it is you need to work on, you realize that actually the problem isn't over here on my left-hand side. It's actually on the right-hand side, and that's a bit I need to work on. But you need, that is your that's the vision for the improvement work, and that is just as valuable, well, just as vital as the vision for the whole company.
And what I like about what you're talking about there is this sense that, first of all, we get clear what's our reason for this change. Then you explore that with people and you get alignment to that reason and purpose. When I talk to people in training, I talk about purpose plus alignment equals shift. You know, we will really get some change and movement on this when we're all aligned and pulling in the same direction. And you then get that clarity with people on why we're going to make this change that sits behind it. So I think that's really key. So one of my other questions, Kate, you've talked about, you work with a number of large companies. I know you also work with small businesses and one-person businesses. And I can see, certainly having worked in large organisations myself, but also having worked in small organisations too, I can see for large ones, you definitely need some systems. Otherwise, it all goes awry. Everybody just does what they fancy. But what about these kind of single-person businesses? Do they need systems? And if so, what's the importance for them?
Well, they need systems because there's an awful lot of stuff to do. There's no such thing as a one-person band, actually. Because even if nobody's your employer, there are people helping you. Even if it's you've subcontracted telephone answering. There are people, you've got suppliers, you've got collaborators. All of these people need to be aligned as well. It's no good, for example, having somebody answering the phone in a sloppy way if the persona you want to show is that of a very professional organisation. So one of the first things I say to people is, for heaven's sake, you know, don't have the kiddie pick up the phone going, "Hello." And you have to say, "Is mummy in?" When, you know, it's all their work is on social media has been to make themselves look really professional. Nothing wrong with working from home, but you need to think about those sort of things. So you need to build everything in together. Everybody needs to be signed up to what you're doing. One of the things that I think we underestimate is the hours that a one-man band works. I know people are working, they're issuing their invoices at 11 o'clock at night. If it's 11 o'clock at night and you've already been doing a full day's work and probably doing lots of stuff with your family as well, the last thing you want is having to think. You need to have something that is so smooth, and I just do this and I turn the handle and out it comes. And it all happens, and it only takes half an hour rather than three quarters of an hour, or even an hour or an hour and a half, plus another half hour the following day, putting it right. You need to have systems that just deliver correctly, smoothly, without thought.
So what we're talking about here, in one sense, is because you're so busy as in this alleged single person business, you need to just set up some simple systems that allow you to work more efficiently.
Yes.
And actually, if that for you is the time I'll do this is late at night, then you need a system in your invoicing that means you're less likely to make mistakes when you're so tired. Yes. If actually you look at your working week and you go, well, what I found is if I don't allocate some invoice time, I end up missing out on it because I get it bumped by other stuff because I'm not particularly interested in my invoicing and I find invoicing boring compared to my core purpose, then you need to get yourself a system, a time in the week where you will ring fence it so you don't miss out on invoicing, so you get the cash flow, isn't it?
Yes.
So that is about, so what we're talking about, the importance of systems for that, this alleged single person business, is to make it more supportive and efficient for them.
Yes.
To enable them to juggle all of those things.
It's also really important, if you get a really good system, it means that when you want holiday cover, you've got a manual you can hand somebody and say, please do this.
Yeah.
Later on, when you're big enough to be able to pay somebody to do it, that you've got something you can hand people.
Yeah.
So long as it's all in your head, you don't have to hand it to anybody. That's fine, but what happens when you get overloaded?
And also when you come to that point of expansion, or if you have taken on somebody and then they leave and you have to find the next person.
Yes.
So I remember with my first PA, Chloe, as she left, she produced this, you know, really detailed set of stuff to be able to hand over to Alice. And then it made the job of Alice so much smoother.
Yes.
And actually, in terms of, again, as an organisation, how we worked, it was seamless for people because you've got those systems that we were running were then documented and put in place as part of that process.
Yes, one of the things that I've often been called in for is when somebody's taking on their first employee in a certain area. And it's that briefing document, the list of things, the standards to which people are supposed to be working. So many people's induction is sort of an airy hand wave and just get on with it. And they don't even know what the it is and supposed to be getting on with it.
And then they wonder later on when things go wrong,
why
that's happened.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the classic thing is, the trouble is people think about systems as things like organising time, but it isn't. It's also what you do. Mm. It's a list of things that you do. So, for example, when you're issuing an invoice, remembering all the steps, like having a template to make it easy. Mm. So you just call it up and you change the price and the person's name.
Yeah.
But your bank details are still at the bottom. Your phone number is still at the top. All of those sort of things are there. The number of people who send out the same basic email week after week after week, but they've never templated it.
Mm.
So sometimes they miss out paragraph A, sometimes they miss out paragraph B. And every time they're trying to rewrite it from memory. That's not the best use of our time.
No.
Write it once, get it right, and then just call it up and copy and paste it each time.
Yeah.
And then do your tweaking to make it personal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So one of the key important areas, I think, for systems is around communication. Mm. And Seth Godin, who I've mentioned already, is one of the authors I love to read, actually. In his book, Tribes, he said, we create a tribe where people are all for the same purpose when we've easy access and communication with the leader, but also when there's easy access and communication with one another. And so if we want our organisations to be efficient and respond quickly to issues, we need that good communication. So in your experience, what systems do we need in place to ensure there is good communication?
It depends on the size of the business, but the principle, the fundamental principle, is that you have to have a no-blame culture. Because in a culture where a whistleblower will be punished, which we see over and over again, people don't blow the whistle. They get frightened, they go away. Now you may think, for heaven's sake, I'm just making sandwiches for the local people, and that there is no whistleblowing here. But maybe you need to know that somebody's skipping a step when it comes to cleaning down.
Mm.
If you've got a kind of culture where nobody can speak about anything, anything at all, there's a danger that something won't be said.
Mm.
So the first thing you have to work at is culture. Mm. And culture goes alongside systems. If culture and systems clash, culture will win.
Mm.
So it's no good saying you have to report these things. You have to be open to it. You have to, when somebody makes a complaint, you should thank them.
Mm.
You know, feedback is the breakfast of champions, and, and you need to have that. Thank heaven you told me, I've got a chance to fix it now.
Mm.
And if that's your first response, even if the first thing is go, but then you come in with a real enthusiasm and then that establishes it's okay. Mm. And I think that's probably the most important part of it. The next is just talk, just talk. My very first full-time job after I left college, I was working in a factory. We were working on process improvement there. And my boss got called off and the general works manager decided he was going to have a coffee morning with his direct reports.
Mm.
And they had one every morning. And we used to make fun of it, but actually it worked brilliantly because people were just the time for sharing a coffee.
Mm.
People weren't writing reports. They weren't going into writing and making complaints to other people. They were just saying to somebody, oh, by the way, we still haven't heard such and such. Oh, I'll get on to it. And problems just melted because you put the sunlight on them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you gave people an opportunity to talk to other people as human beings in a relaxed environment, and things got done.
Yeah, and you said it's important to talk, and again, what I'm hearing though is that key element of listening as well, that you're listening to one another, the boss is listening to those he's talking and listening to, and they'll find out that information when he listens, and it's that two-way street to follow through. So for good communication, that opportunity to talk and to listen to one another, culture to make it okay to give feedback when actually systems are breaking down, because that's when you can make those improvements as part of that process as well. I guess one of my things, particularly with larger organisations, is how you make sure that communication is efficient and not become this kind of wieldy beast of communication between departments or whatever, that actually ends up kind of not helping. People find it too laborious or whatever. So what's your advice there, particularly for perhaps large organisations, how we make it efficient but not wieldy?
I once had to take over a failing subsidiary, which was a very embarrassing failing.
Mm.
So I put up a full list of everything that was wrong behind my desk on the whiteboard, and people were just horrified. I said, but anybody could see this? I said, yes. And then they saw us tick them off as we saw them.
Mm.
So we were spending our energy in solving the problems, not in trying to hide them.
Mm.
Now, it's perfectly possible to do that even if you don't have problems. You want to be communicating the whole time.
Mm.
So you put up charts that show how your department is working. You invite in your process partners to see it.
Mm.
You have, you know, even if it's like once a week, you just meet up with the people that you're working with. Now, when I talk about process partner, the silo version of businesses is often my job is to get this over to that door. Once it leaves the door, I don't care. That's what people will say.
Mm.
But that's not true. Somebody the other side of the door is picking it up. Invite them in. Talk to them. What do you do with what I supply you?
Mm.
How can I help you do that better? You've now then opened it up. They're going to tell you things you didn't know. You're going to find out you're doing things they don't like. You're going to find out that they love some of the things you're doing. And then gradually you're going to start working together. And all of a sudden there's no longer a door. It's just, you know, an opening and a handshake. And once you've done that, you can then go to the people that you're getting stuff from and you can say, you know, this has worked really well with Charlie down there. I'd quite like to work this with you. Do you think, you know, I would like to know, you know, why you're doing some of the things you're doing. How can we talk about it?
Mm.
And the whole thing then becomes seamless. It puts the whole process as one process. It doesn't matter you've got different process managers. Mm. Because people see themselves as working together as a team. But that has to happen at management level. Mm. That's not something you can't say to the person who is producing the parts, you've got to go and talk to someone. Mm. Not without putting in a very, very strong framework and a great deal of help, which of course is what I was, some of the things I was doing with large companies. But if you want to run it as a general thing, it has to happen at management level. And therefore people have to see that their job is not just managing this department, but actually making this department a good process partner with their internal customers and internal suppliers.
So again, we're talking about creating a culture here of how we work with departments and how we don't see ourselves as a silo within that, but actually a key success is how I'm linking with the other departments. And if I'm not linking well, then actually I'm not successful. So it's just defining the culture of success in terms of communication between departments is a key aspect of the culture.
But the culture comes down even to objectives. Mm. There was one company I was working with and a major breakthrough took place when, this is, sounds incredible, it's absolutely true. The members of the management team started to talk about their objectives with one another. Mm-hmm. Mm. Up until this point, the MD had given each of the members of the team their own objectives and they'd taken them away. For the first time, they were sharing them and they began to realize that person A couldn't achieve their objective without screwing up person B and vice versa. Mm. And that was a major shock because actually you've set it up as a gladiatorial combat and you're going to end up with blood on the floor and that's not going to benefit anybody. And it wasn't the intention. Mm. It was just that because they didn't understand the machinery of how they were going to achieve it, that they'd set in this competition. Mm. And that was a major step forward for the culture as well. It was quite a culture shock.
Yeah. I mean, this whole thing that you're describing here around silos of thinking, and I find silos in organisations fascinating. And so for some of our listeners who have not come across this, you know, the silo thinking is around, you know, it's quite tribal. They're only thinking about their issues and not thinking about others. And there's that, you know, you sometimes hear these phrases like, we do it best here in this department, we're having to cover for that other department, those others get it wrong, we have to pick up the pieces, all that kind of tribal mentality. And it can be fatal for an organisation, can't it? That the impact on performance that has, because they're not doing what you've described there, of connecting with one another. So how do we set that up where we're having systems that will reduce this silo thinking and departmentalism? Is there any kind of experience or tips you've got there?
Joint working. Mm-hmm. One of the things that they did the following year, having had this major shock, was that the company decided that they were going to set up key objectives, which are genuine objectives for the business. Mm. And unfortunately, some objectives are not business objective. So go back to your vision. What are you trying to achieve? Mm. What's important? And use those. Don't make things up just so somebody's got some. And then they set mutual objectives. So two people were working together to achieve the same objective. Mm. And I've always said that in a manufacturing business, which is where I started work, the salespeople get the first sale, but manufacturing and distribution get the second.
Yes.
Because it doesn't matter how good the salesman is, if the sales executive, it's my showing my age now. It doesn't matter how good the sales executive is, if the actual business performance of the supplier is hopeless, they won't get the second order. Mm. And yet the salesman is always tasked with getting the second order. Mm. But that's not appropriate. Mm. One of the things that horrifies me is how rare it is for people in other forms of management to go out with a salesperson and actually meet a real customer. Mm. You know, that is one advantage that small businesses have. They're dealing with customers the whole time because that's what they do. Mm. But if you're in a large organization, you can forget the customers even exist. Mm. in local authorities, you can often think your business is being a local authority. Mm. And you forget that Mrs. Murgatroyd is on the front desk talking to somebody they're trying to help. And is Mrs. Murgatroyd is your customer. Mm. And you should be out there on the front desk occasionally, just listening, not necessarily doing anything more than listening.
Yeah.
But really listen and find out what it is you do, how what you do affects other people, how you could do it better, and start the whole thinking.
So you're really talking about this collaboration between departments. There's a sense, as you're talking there, around cross-fertilization, just understanding each other's perspectives and what can I pick up from this. And really going back again to who we're here to serve and experience that. So I love your idea of, you know, someone in manufacturing going out with a salesperson. Mm. But also then, because not to, just as the manufacturing department understand what's going on out there in sales, but actually they can then help the salesperson to understand that when you're promising these things, actually, this is what happens, you know, this is the impact for us back on here. And if that's what you're promising, then we need to understand this better back in manufacturing. So that just to develop that understanding by working together on things can be crucial, can't it?
And sometimes you have to take the initiative. It's no good waiting to be invited. Sometimes you have to say, I'd like to.
Mm.
I'd like to invite you in. I'd like to come out with and see what's happening where you are.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's waiting for somebody to do it. Well, you know, I'm going to do it.
So one of the things I think is really important, we've kind of picked up aspects of this, that you set a system up, but this reviewing, this do and review is really important. And I've worked with a number of organisations. I remember on some, you know, starting and then arriving thinking, oh my goodness, why are they still doing this? This is like 20 years old and no longer serves or is fit for purpose in what we're looking at. So if we're, like, particularly if someone has come into an organisation and they're seeing it, how do we go about reviewing if systems are fit for purpose? Some of them would be really obvious, but how do you go about reviewing that?
You go back to what the whole purpose of the organisation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're a commercial organisation, you will have a purpose, and that has to involve your customers.
Mm.
Ask your customers.
Mm.
Look at the legislation. So you've got environmental issues as well. Listen to the things your employees say. Be careful, though, because if the employee doesn't understand the whole situation, they may well say, let's make such and such an improvement.
Mm.
And you can see it doesn't work, but they can't see why it's going to make things worse because they don't understand knock-on effects.
Mm.
So you have to set up the context in which they can understand why it might not work, but listen to everybody.
Mm.
You just need to put in some time in your diary to work on your business, not in it.
Mm.
Now, it's particularly difficult for a one-man band because they are so busy doing the do.
Mm.
They have to do everything. But there's no excuse in larger organisations. They just don't do it.
Mm.
And quite often this is because they've gone into a routine of, right, well, it's budgeting time and let's do the budgets.
Mm.
And so they do the numbers and then nobody stands back and says, right, well, we're going to actually have an away day where we discuss what it is we're doing and why we should be doing it and what we need to work on next.
Mm.
And there's no reason why people can't do that. Mm. I mean, yes, okay. Somebody's going to say, hey, it's a management jolly.
Mm.
Well, you've got broad shoulders. You should have.
Mm.
Just get on with it. Yeah. You know what they're going to say. Do it anyway.
Yeah.
And then you come back with lots of ideas and everybody goes, oh God, he's been on a course. He's going to have these ideas. But you're taking things forward and you're taking things forward together and you're building the whole community because each person who is there now knows what they're trying to do and they take that knowledge away and it disseminates out.
Yeah.
And that's much better than having bulletins or notices on the notice board that nobody reads, written in management speak that nobody can understand.
Mm.
People see it living. They actually see it in action.
Mm.
And I think that's the important thing.
Yeah.
But you need to take time away from the coalface to think about, yes, we're up to our anatomy and alligators.
Mm.
Should we be draining a swamp? Should we even be in this swamp? What have we got against the alligators? Are some of these alligators pets? We, you know, because we know how to bonk them on the nose, they go away. And so we feel that we're doing things. There's a lot of people who cause their own fires and then put the fires out and look heroic. But actually, if they were doing the right things, they wouldn't be fires. You know, but you need to allocate the time.
Yeah.
And it's the middling, the small businesses that are not one-man bands, but they're only small. They're the ones it's hardest for because they don't have those skills. In a large organization, you've usually got an HR department that certainly has those skills and can help you set that up. In a small business, you're likely to be working very hard on the business anyway. It's the middling business where we've always done it this way. Family businesses are an interesting dynamic.
So some of the key aspects there being deliberate about time.
Yes.
You talked about giving context to your staff, but then working with staff to, again, it's that culture of being okay to raise things and explore things together, listening to customer. And then once you've explored that, working with people face to face on these are the issues we found that we need to kind of review and improve them.
But they need to be, you need to work on continual improvement. One advantage of dealing with it as systems and processes is it takes the emotion out of it. It's not you're getting it wrong. It's this system isn't working. I love the thing, it's not fit for purpose. As soon as you say that, it takes some of the emotion out of it. It stops people feeling guilty. It allows them to say, yes, you know, it's like an old car. You know, it's got to the point it's not going to pass its MOT. We really need to change it. And then it becomes a very rational decision. You're in the rational part of your brain and you're able to deal with it rationally.
Yeah, and what I found with scenarios like that is if you help people to understand when this was established, because they will love some of those systems because we've always done it that way.
Yeah.
When this was established, it was fit for purpose. It was really helpful in this way, and this way. And we honour that. We're now in this situation.
Yes.
And this situation demands these newer ways of approaching it because, as you say, it isn't fit anymore. But it was great then.
Yes.
So I think honouring the past, again, helps people with that transition, yes, doesn't it?
And that involves having this idea of continual improvement without blaming. Because if you've got a blame culture, then anything that suggests that this isn't perfect now automatically becomes blame. Somebody must be wrong, somebody's head should roll, all that sort of nonsense. By saying, yes, it's just things have moved on. Pre-COVID, there were certain, you know, look at all this thing about whether you should work from home or not, whether you have to go into the office. We're starting to question that because we've got sort of online communications have changed so much in the last 2 years.
Things are different. Yeah, it's part of that process. This last kind of question around reviewing systems. So I remember a situation, and it links with our communication bit, once where I had a large school, had 120 staff, and I was getting a number of people saying, oh, communication here, it's not good enough, it's not strong enough. And so I said, right, let's address this then. And I got a representative from each staff type within the organization. So I had somewhere in the region of 20 people sitting around a table, which of course in terms of dynamics is not easy at all. But it ensured I had a representative from every particular group to make sure. And we ruthlessly, just as you were describing, we put it all up on the board. Right, what's the issue? Let's get it all out. Let's get it all up on the board. And let's go through these one at a time. Let's agree together how we're going to tackle each one. Let's prioritize, let's work through them. And within 3 months, the tone had changed completely. Instead of it being communication here is rubbish, it was a case of communication here is good. And so I just wonder if we've got to that point of thinking, actually, yeah, there's something inherently we've got to give a good, you know, the system's got to have a good damn thrashing here. How important is it to involve all the kind of staff, stakeholders, people involved in situations like that?
It's very important, but you have to have a process to review, do process review.
I almost
review.
Expect you to say that. Once we're talking about process, you must have a process to review.
Absolutely.
The process, yeah.
But it is important because nobody's got the full picture. And everybody knows their own bit and they know their own bit very well. And there's all sorts of things going on where they just assume, people assume that people know. And in large organisations, everybody assume the bosses know everything. And so therefore, if bad things are happening, the boss knows about it and they've no idea at all, that the boss has no idea.
Mm.
So what you have to do is you have to bring people in. You can only bring, as you say, representatives in, because you can't bring everybody in. That would stop the whole business.
Mm.
But you need to have a system that allows them to, you know, you're building a microcosm. So you've got to have culture.
Mm.
You've got to have work with respect, build a team, you know, all of those good things.
Mm.
So there's an awful lot about interpersonal dynamics. So people tend to think about a process improvement as being, well, you do this, you do this, you do this. But a lot of it is done on the human level.
Mm.
And so people aren't going to come up with ideas if you keep shutting them down.
Mm.
People aren't going to come up with ideas if they feel stupid. I'm only a, that's the phrase I always get. Oh, I'm only a clerk. I'm only a receptionist. I'm only this, only that. I've seen teams produce amazing work. There's one, they reduced something that was taking 60 days down to less than 10.
Mm.
They did it by working together as a team, but it took a lot of, it's a bit like the swan, it was a lot of paddling under the surface that they didn't see that we were doing to set this team up and to keep it running properly. And to do that, you need to have an experienced facilitator working with that team. And that person needs to know the interpersonal stuff, but they also need to know process improvement. So you might need two, one who knows one, one who knows the other. You know, not everybody knows everything. They don't teach process at school. And I think that's such a shame, because people want to improve things, but they don't have a mechanism for it. If somebody got them to learn process flow charting, which is what I do, just, you know, here's a pack of sticky notes. We're going to put them on the board and we're going to write things down. And then we're going, that one's wrong, we'll tear it up, throw it away, put another one, build a picture. And all of a sudden people see what they do. And then they can see, well, that's a bit of stupid, isn't it? What we need to do it is do that in that order. And, and why is that person doing it? And why is it being done twice? People can see it. And I do think people need to have these kind of systems available to them. And mostly because they are a receptionist, they don't teach flowcharting to receptionists. Well, that's the sort of thing I do. I teach flowcharting to receptionists and anybody else. Very simple flowcharting. You know, you do this, you do this, you do this. You, nothing too complicated. But then people see what's happening and they can work together on it. But somebody needs to set that team up. It can't just happen. So I have seen during the total quality revolution of the late 80s, early 90s, an awful lot of people said, well, that's all right, you know, go away and make improvements. And people went, well, what are we supposed to do? Well, it's a process. It's a process improvement. And you need to provide that. And you need to provide that help and support.
So anyone doing this gets some help and support as part of that. But the key aspects are making sure everybody knows the culture you're going to be working within as part of that. You work with people at the human level so they understand how you're going to work together and the kind of culture that sits within that. You try and gain some clarity so people understand each other's perspectives. And you've talked about creating that culture where, again, it's okay to raise issues, and then that ability to look at things perhaps visually, to work together to see where's it working, where is it breaking down, and to plan those.
Not everybody works the same way. Part of the difficulty is that I remember one guy saying, Myron Tribus, saying that school is where people go to watch the teachers work. Well, of course, there are schools like that. Really good teachers, of course, realise that kids learn in different ways and they'll run the thing through for different kids in different ways. And when you're working with people, you have to realise some people are auditory, some people are physical. They, you know, they can't talk about things, but they can do it. You know, some people need the pictures, and you need to have all of this. So you need to have, if somebody says, I can't do that, you need to have something else in your armory. You can't be a one-trick pony. One size doesn't fit all, one process doesn't fit all. You have to work with people where they are to create that. And I think that's very important. And on the human side, I think, you know, it's that is critical, because people are working in a state of anxiety. They're at the edge of their comfort zone, probably the other side where learning takes place. But you don't want to get them to panic. So the whole time you're working with them to make them just push the envelope a bit. Mm. And so that really does require independent help. And sometimes it requires help from outside the organization, depending on the organization, because sometimes it just feels like the people in the organization have got an agenda.
Yeah, yeah.
And somebody comes in from outside and they've got no history, no nothing, and then they're there to help.
Yeah, and I'm sure we've both found that working with organisations, we come in as the independent person from outside and we can perhaps talk to them about messages that somebody inside can't, because they know there's no vested interest from us, and what we're trying to just do is help them to see the best, isn't it? So having reviewed your system, having realised there's something that needs to change, obviously it's then about trying to get successful change. And you and I, you know, we've chatted, and one of my favourite change models is Noster's model of complex change. And he talks about the need for vision, skills, the right incentive, the right resources, and a clear action plan to make those kind of things happen. And that, just taking that first one, when vision is missing, it creates confusion. I mean, have you seen this? And we've talked about the importance of vision throughout our session today. Have you seen this? And if so, how can you help organisations to avoid this confusion?
Well, you have to go back to vision every time. You know, what is it you want to do? And you have to have enough courage to insist that, in the nicest possible way, that your client goes through defining the vision. Because they all, oh, we know that. Fine. If you know that, you can tell me.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's gone very quiet. So then you go, right, okay. So it's difficult to put these things into words. You don't do it in a gladiatorial way. You know, it's difficult to put these things into words. We all know what we're doing, but let's see if we can have some words. There was one manufacturing company I worked with, and they couldn't put it into words, and they had a lot of problems, and I made some suggestions, and then they came back. And what they'd realised was that actually they talked about themselves as a manufacturing company. They weren't, they were manufacturing and service. And then, so they put service actually into their objective. And they suddenly realized they had this service organization, which was incredibly profitable. And they'd been completely neglecting it because it wasn't seen, because they were a manufacturing company. Now they're manufacturing a service company. They started putting some senior managers in there. They started giving it some oomph. And it really changed the fortunes of the company. And it also positively impacted on the manufacturing side. But it took a lot of courage to say, no, you have to do this bit. We're not moving on until you do. And sometimes that's also has to be of somebody from outside, because who's going to look the chief executive in the eye and say no?
Yeah, or it's not clear enough. Again, some of the work I do working with people is just to drill that down to almost just one word, so that it's clear and everybody knows what they're doing. And as you say, being able to say that to the main leader, but it's crucial in order to get the change to happen.
A friend of mine used to say, we go to meetings and he'd come out and he'd say, having lost sight of the objectives, we redoubled our efforts. And I think an awful lot of businesses are like that. They've lost sight of the objectives. So everybody's working very hard, but...
Yeah, but you've got to go back and get really clear on your purpose, isn't it? His next one is, you know, you get anxiety when the skills aren't there. And what I've discovered as well, of course, it's not just if the skills aren't there, but if people don't think they have the skills either. So how can we help people with that? How can we, again, if we're talking about establishing systems here that support that?
Well, there is help available. And I think that people can, they can either read the books for themselves, or they can ask people like myself to come in and help them. I mean, there's all sorts of things on the skills. This is why my example about teaching flowcharting to the receptionist. It seems like, oh my God, I couldn't do it. But actually, you do it in a very low-key way, and they don't see themselves as learning skills. They see themselves, oh, right, we're going to do this exercise. And all of a sudden, they've got a new skill, and it develops from there. But you have to put that in. You can't say to people, just get on with it, because they don't know what it is or how to do it. And One of the biggest problems is for people for whom it is obvious that they think that people are being difficult, or that the answer is to incentivize people. Mm. Actually, most of the time, the issue is to give them the resources and then get out of their way. Mm. You know, people don't want to work these days. Actually, they do, give them a chance. Mm. But it's this bit about it's obvious. It isn't obvious. There was a point at which you had to learn to drive. There was a point at which you had to learn to read. Mm. It's not obvious. Mm. And that's why good teachers are so important. Mm. And a really good facilitator will be teaching the team the skills as they go through.
And I think in my experience of working with organisations, where I've seen the best ones, it's where they've been quite purposeful in really getting to know and understand their staff, what they can do, and what they need help with, what they need encouragement, that they actually already do have that. But then there's this deliberate and purposeful way of equipping people as part of that process as well, and working that into your systems and processes, that looking after, upskilling, and supporting and purposely developing your staff is key, and that will help your organisation grow, and it'll help them feel more confident in their skills and therefore able to cope with the transition and change. And if you're bringing something in new, is identifying what skills are needed for people.
Yes.
Let's purposely develop them, just as you're describing there, teaching them something as part of that process is key. Good. Okay, well, our time flies, Kate, when we're in the Leadership Lounge. And I
told you I could talk for you on the subject.
Yeah, and it's great to have you with us, just exploring the importance of systems, because as we say, leadership is about painting that picture of the future. But if we don't put in those structures to kind of help people work towards that future, we end up floundering and it failing because we're not having done so. So we're at that point at the end of our time in the Leadership Lounge, just pulling out, what is it? What are the key things for people thinking about systems in their organisation that we need to remember?
I think one of the things I'd say, just on the basis, this is going to sound really weird, well, it sounds weird to me, is to actually be aware that there is a process. You see, for me, it's like X-ray vision. As soon as I look at something, I'm seeing the machinery that produces it. Mm. But for an awful lot of people, it could be Harry Potter waving his wand. These things sort of magically happen. Mm. I often make, if I'm working with a group of women, I'll talk about the laundry fairy, and they all fall about laughing because everybody knows there is no laundry fairy.
What?
Exactly. But the thing is, For something to happen, somebody needs to do something. Mm. And what are those somethings? Mm. And just become more aware. So as you become more aware, then you'll start noticing things. Mm. Well, hang on a moment. The reason that it's cold is because somebody didn't switch on the heating. Mm. It isn't normally cold. Somebody must switch on the heating. I wonder who switches on the heating. And then you find the person you made redundant last week was the person who switched on the heating. Mm. And because nobody knew that everybody's having to wear their coat at work. It's stupid things like that people don't notice and trips them up. Mm. But once you start getting used to seeing process, how, not the what, not the why, because the why is about your vision purpose, and the rest of it, but you need to see the details of the how. Mm. And get used to, when somebody says, just do it, you go, by what method? Mm. And then that brings you back down to earth and say, right, I need some details. I need to know who's going to do it, what are the steps they're going to take, what are they not going to use? Are they going to use a computer or a pen and paper? Mm. Are they going to, you know, do you see what I mean? It's that you become a lot more practical and things actually happen. Mm. So you're not building castles in the air. You're actually building castles on the ground.
Yeah.
So I would say just become more and more aware of the how.
Mm. Brilliant. Lovely. Kate, thank you ever so much for joining us. It's been a delight to chat to you again and for you to share your wisdom as the business plumber. And so for those of us who join us on the Leadership Lounge, thank you for joining us. And we look forward to joining us again next month with our next guest.